Hello, Rich. What's up?
I'm trying to find a car insurance broker that can cover classic high-performance or highly modified cars.
Well, there's Adrian Flux. When I needed to cover my 900-horsepower street-legal electric dragster, they didn't even blink.
Really?
Well, they might have blinked, but it was on the phone, so I couldn't really see them.
I hope they blinked at some point, otherwise you get, you know, really dry eyes.
Oh, yeah, that is true. This episode of the Smith & Sniff podcast is sponsored by Adrian Flux.
I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, urban exploring in a scrapyard. Have you seen that Ineos Grenadier that they announced last week?
Yeah, I was on the online press unveil. I don't know what you'd call it. Yeah.
Were you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, where they did it all via Zoom with the CEO and the designers. Yeah, it was actually really cool.
Huh.
I enjoyed it. Hang on, I'm just shutting the door. Just realised I started recording with the door open. It's no good, is it? Totally unpro.
No, unless you're on Five Live. They don't care.
Five Live, I've got one of those very powerful fans. I would have left it on number three.
just let me open this grab bag of quavers and then we'll be good to go.
Oh, it is. It's a crinkle cut crisp every time.
Anyway, well, I wasn't invited to the Ineos online reveal.
Weren't you?
No, and I don't want you to think that's in any way affected what I'm going to say. It may be the reason I wasn't invited, because I'd already sort of grumbled a bit online about this thing, and now they've fully revealed it. And I'll be honest,
Come on, Rich. Simply
do not get the point of that car, and I think it's a stupid waste of time, and it annoys me.
Oh, really? God, this is a heartfelt response.
Well,
isn't it?
And I realise, obviously, there's a lot of caveats here. One of them is I have a Land Rover Defender, old style,
yes,
which I love. But I also fully accept it's a piece of 1950s farm equipment, lightly dragged into the 21st century.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, it's stupid and old-fashioned and indefensible in many ways. And obviously, there's no logic to my love of it. But at the same time, I do accept it is the end of days for something. And they had to stop making it. They should have stopped making it because it was increasingly completely outclassed. I mean, you know, even people in Land Rover off the record would admit years ago that the best off-roading car they made in the 21st century for a while was the Range Rover Sport.
Yeah.
Because if you stuck it on the right tyres, it had all the electronics that would help you off-road. It had air suspension, nice short wheelbase, shorter than a Range Rover or a Discovery. And it would just scamper away, and it was better than a Defender. But they could never really admit that, because the Defender was, you know, sort of like, it'd be like dissing the Queen Mother in their world.
Well, she did have terrible teeth.
Yeah.
And
who's the nicest member of the royal family? Well, obviously, it's the Queen Mother. It's not really. She's horrible.
You opened your kind of soapbox debate using the term end of days, which immediately threw me across to an Enya song. And then I had to drag myself back. But now I've dragged myself back to talk about the Ineos Grenadier. And the first thing I think about with the Grenadier is I keep getting it mixed up with the Bombardier, which is a beer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a British beer. And do you remember
the
comedian Rick Mayall did the TV adverts once for Bombardier?
Yes, he did.
He's very, very sort of pompous and funny. And every time I hear Grenadier or see it written on social media, I keep having to say it in a sort of drunk colonial way. Grenadier. I've got the Ineos Grenadier. Lovely car.
This is weird. Because I think of grenadine, which is a drink, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. It's that sort of foreign holiday drink.
Yeah, it's very... What have you got? What's in the cupboard under the stairs that you brought back from Tenerife?
Oh, it's always Grenadier.
This Grenadier, is that any good? Yeah, it's... Yeah, anyway. But the car itself reminds me, Kel friggin' surprise, of a terrible Soviet state knockoff of a Defender.
Oh, really?
It looks awful. Yeah, it's so lazy. It's like they've just copied but changed enough that they won't get sued.
Oh.
But there's no original thinking in it. And it's like, I mean, I know that they wanted it to be square cut and flat sided and all that.
Yeah.
But a Defender doesn't look exactly like a G-Wagen, which doesn't look exactly like an old Ford Bronco, which are all cars they claim to have benchmarked. And they've just decided we're going to copy the Defender as much as we can. And then, you know, even that, I notice it looks like it's got those Alpine lights, you know, the little windows in the roof, like a Defender
yes,
or a Discovery.
That's right.
But obviously, they're a bit of a Land Rover signature, so they couldn't just rip them off. So they've had to make them not windows, they're mountings for accessories and stuff.
That's right.
It's such a clear crib. You just go, it didn't have to look like that.
It's got nice twin sunroofs above the driver and passenger, which I like, which is only in front.
In fairness, I liked that as well. I thought that was quite
nice. I brought you around within 2 minutes of your...
Oh, yeah, I've decided I like it now. No, I just... It drives me nuts. I think it's a bad piece of design. I think it's lazy. I think some of the detailing is sloppy. You can tell it wasn't done by a qualified car designer. It was done by someone who fancied a go at car design. And people who do that often find... As I gather, the people who did the Dyson car, that will never happen, but that was done by non-car designers and they found it harder than they thought. And so I don't like the way it looks, because I thought it'll come out, it'll look like a sort of a really clever modern interpretation of my style of Defender, and I'll fall in love with it. But no, I hate it. I think it reminds me of, you know, when Land Rover sold sort of the rights to make Land Rovers to different companies. There was Santana in Spain, and then through that connection,
everyone is going on about it being what the Defender maybe should have been.
It absolutely should not.
It's not trying to look like a Defender. It's trying to look like the thing that was trying to look like the Defender, which is the Santana PS10. And you know, the thing
it's
about
like when impressionists go, you know, like Rory Bremner or back in the day Mike Yarwood would have gone, if Margaret Thatcher was trying to do Cilla Black, I think it would sound a bit like this. It's like you're doing an impression of an impression, and it's just awful.
Look, to its credit, the front is very Santana, and the front is okay, but the more I look at it, the better I feel about it. I like the back end. I like the sort of kinked rear door with the tailored ladder. But the important things to point out here is it's got some pretty good credentials. It's built... or going to be built by Magna Steyr in Austria, so next to the G-Wagon and the...
No, it's not. It's going to be built in a really cock-assed, lengthy production line way, because parts of it come from Portugal, and then the engines come from Germany, and the gearbox, I guess, which is ZF, and it's all shipped to South Wales, where they're building a new factory in Bridgend, not the old Ford factory. They're building a new factory, I believe, and it's going to be... What? Final assembly will be there.
I thought they were building it. I thought Magna were building it.
No, they're doing development work on it.
Oh, okay. Well, so I've got that wrong. Okay, well,
they're going to claim it's British, but actually most of the parts that go together to make it, which is not uncommon in cars these days, but the actual bits, like the chassis, will be made in Portugal and then shipped.
Axles are Italian. They chose Carraro. So they're Italian, like heavy plant kind of derived straight axles.
And they're beam axles.
They're beam axles.
Even pickup trucks don't have on the front end anymore. They've willfully gone old school on that, but then they've teamed it with a state-of-the-art BMW straight six petrol or diesel engine and that ZF 8HP gearbox, which is the sort of absolute benchmark of automatic gearboxes in today's world, and everybody in Jag and BMW. And
you can get a Manuel. You will be able to order it with a Manuel, I believe.
Really? I've not seen that mentioned anywhere, because I didn't know that a manual would mate up to the engine.
Yeah.
The current engines they're using.
I'm sure I wrote it down. I'm looking at me. Yeah, they did. They did mention that you might be able to get a Manuel. But yeah, straight six petrol and diesel, BMW motor, who's their engine partner. Italian axles made by Carraro, ZF box for automatic, optional reduction boxes. It's basically the BMW X5 engine range that they're using. Yeah. Steel body and chassis, aluminium hanging panels, two skylights, flat windscreen, and it's going to be... They won't release the price yet, but when we sort of poked them about it, they said it's going to be above a top-end Ford Ranger Raptor and Wildtrak and the Invincible Hilux kind of price point.
Which is...
It's 45?
Yeah, well, a Ranger Raptor's almost 50.
Okay, so... And the Defender commercial edition called the Hardtop was just released.
Yeah, so that's 35 plus VAT.
Plus VAT, which everyone moans about because they go, just say it's 42. We go, well, no, because if you're a business person or a farmer, you always say plus VAT, don't you?
Claim the VAT back, yeah.
You claim the VAT back, don't you?
Have the VAT back. But that's the thing about that INEOS. I think they're sort of saying it'll be in the 40s plus VAT. Mm. They haven't mentioned, because it'll be classified as a commercial vehicle, I believe. It's an N1 category car.
Yeah.
Which is another little sort of cheeky that they haven't really made too much of, that they're going to sell it as a commercial vehicle, which is fair enough, you know, but I all those pickups and latterly Defenders were commercial vehicles. So,
yep.
You know, that's how it works. But it's, and I guess.
You'll be able to hose it out as well, Rich. Do you know that?
Big whoop.
Yeah, because everyone does.
They do, and then goes, oh, why are my trousers all wet? Oh, because I got the seats wet. Why does the stereo not work? They've not shown the interior as well, have they? But they're saying, I saw the designer saying it'll have all the screens and things that modern consumers expect. It's like, well, why doesn't it have independent front suspension then?
Yeah.
I drove 150 miles in my Defender last week to go to a meeting.
And you're still in hospital.
And I'm still in hospital. Yeah, my leg is still in plaster. No, it's fine, but I'm an idiot and a masochist, and I just like my Defender, but what I don't understand is, and I appreciate this sort of sounds bizarre and hypocritical because I'm sort of ragging on the INEOS whilst happily tooling around in what is basically the same sort of car. But the point is, the Defender is a brand new car that was actually a classic. You were buying a brand new classic, and that's fine.
You were.
I don't understand why INEOS has willfully made the car lower tech in some ways than they could, because this idea that it has to be absolutely peerless off-road, that's not the way that things work now. I bet the new Defender is peerless off-road because it has a boatload of tech and it has air suspension and it is configured in a way that will make it really, really good in all conditions, rather than relying on old-fashioned sort of mechanical ways of doing it, which are fine, but it's like, don't think that off-road enthusiasts will buy a 50 grand INEOS grenade, because they won't, because they all go and buy 1500 quid Discovery 2s and then bobtail them. If you're a hardcore off-roading enthusiast and it's a hobby, you don't buy
spending
a 50 grand brand new car.
Yeah.
So then you're left with, like, well, farmers don't spend more money than they need to because they're running a business. Farms are businesses. You don't want to spunk your money away. So what you do is you go and buy a Hilux or an L200 or an Isuzu and you claim the VAT back.
Farmers ruin cars. Don't
yes.
they? Because,
yeah.
You know, a cow just back kicks the side of your Hilux about 2 weeks after you buying it.
Yeah.
And then you never repair the dent, because what's the point?
Exactly. But that's fine. It's a working tool. It needs to be as cheap and as tough to buy, to run. And that means that you know where the bits come from. You know they're affordable. A BMW straight six engine connected to a ZF 8-speed automatic gearbox is not rough and tough countryside technology. It's a technology from an urban SUV, and you've applied it to something. Where I'm going with this is, I do not understand who is going to buy that car. It's not farmers. I don't think, the problem is, it doesn't look good enough for it to appeal to urbanites who would have maybe been looking at the new Defender, or people who may be like, you know, like you have got a Jimny, because it's a cool little thing and it's got that functional utilitarian appeal to it. I think this INEOS falls between two stools, and it is neither one thing nor the other. It's low tech in one way, high tech in another. It's supposed to be completely functional, and yet actually it's sort of turned its back on ways in which it could be more effective by using technology, and it's just too expensive.
And it's named after a pub. But
or
I,
a kind of liquid you come back from Greece with on holiday.
I'm almost glad that it exists, because I think it feels similar to people, and maybe I'm one of those people, that would buy a diver's watch that completely ill-suited to what I would put it to on a daily basis.
Yes.
But I like the fact that it's been built so that it's incredibly robust and it can withstand this, that and the other. But realistically, like, the most water mine gets is on bathing my children and washing a car with a pressure washer. But I guess I know, but it could do that. And that's what Land Rover has sold the dreams on for years. But
absolutely.
I suppose the difference is many of these components, and actually I don't, and the front end is a bit of a grower, I can imagine you could accessorize it up a bit. I think the price point is probably the bit which has killed it a little, because like you say, if you were going for a utilitarian market, that utilitarian market. You've got to convince that utilitarian market that it's utilitarian and you're going to buy it and own it for in excess of a decade. If you're going to buy it for 10 to 15 years, which is old school way of owning a car, then maybe this will work. And if you love it enough and you dig the, you know, the heavy plant axles and the fact that it's feels like it's going to be unbreakable with a separate body chassis, then great. But it doesn't have the legacy to fall back on, which is where Land Rover has always done, even when they come bottom of reliability surveys. People still go, it's a Range Rover, so I love it. But it's a Range Rover. And that's what surprises me about Range Rover, is that they can almost consistently get mocked for being riddled with electrical gremlins, but people still adore the bloody things. They still adore them.
The loyalty is extraordinary, isn't it? As a friend of mine in the US, it took him 3 faulty Range Rovers before he gave up buying Range Rovers. It's like, did you not? You didn't even think that. No, okay, fine. Yeah, it's just like
It's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like coming home from work and the Labrador is shat on your bed. And you're slightly upset about it, but then it comes along and it licks your face, so it's all okay. But you go, there's still a poo on my bed, though, isn't there? So I'm still not massively happy.
I mean, most people I know, though not all, but most people I know who've ever had a Range Rover of any age have had a bit of aggro with it. And yet, I would have a Range Rover like a shot. I love them. I think there's nothing else feels like a full-size Range Rover. Even other Range Rovers don't quite get close. You know, a Sport or a Velar, they don't feel like the Big Daddy. And there's something very nice about it. It's almost hard to explain what it is, but there's a sense of well-being. But yeah, I mean, their quality is, it's so variable, isn't it? There's not even sort of known faults. It's like a mate of mine had a full-size lash-shaped Range Rover, and it's like one of the headlights kept going out. And again, yeah, loyalty / glutton for punishment. He got a Sport. His mum had had...
Stop.
What?
Say it again.
Oh, beg your pardon. He got a Sport. And
Sport. You can't even see my neck. It's bobbing to and fro.
God. At one point, my chin retracted into my neck like a turtle for some reason. Yeah, anyway, he got one of those. That was his mum's. His mum had had it from new. And so he knew where that car had come from. It had come from his mum, and she'd done very few miles in it, and she's an older lady and a gentle driver. And then he had it, and it just was a litany of disaster, including that the engine packed up. And as it was being loaded onto the recovery truck, he heard this tss, and it started dropping onto its bump stops. And he said to the bloke, "What's going on?" And the guy just went, "Looks like your suspension's failing, mate." And it's like, it's literally developed another fault while it's being pulled onto a recovery wagon. He got rid of that car pretty soon after, but he had to pay to have it mended first. And he's just bought another Range Rover.
So, seriously?
Yeah. Well, not just, actually. He's just, he bought it, I think, last year, and he's very happy with it and has had no problems with it. So that's the thing. You just don't know. You roll the dice. But, you know, someone once explained to me that the word quality in the car industry generally is sort of referring to being able to build something repeatably to a high standard. Quality is about consistency, and that, I think, is where Land Rover let themselves down. It's the inconsistency of their cars, where you might get a good one, you might not. They have sort of a bit of a roll the dice kind of thing, which, you know, in fairness, I have to say, I have had no problems with my Defender. Except that.
Well, that's because it's basically it's a piece of charcoal with a pencil driven through it. And it's like, I check it every day and it seems fine. It's because it's all it is.
The door's still open. Well, one of them does. No, it's good. Yeah. The only problem I ever had was not long after I'd got it, one of the side repeaters misted up, got condensation in it. And I had to, when it went in for its first service, they replaced it for me under warranty. But apart from that, it has been, touch wood, absolutely fine. But there's not much to go wrong.
I think let's live and let live. Let the Ineos Grenadine live, because there's so many people constantly moaning about the Defender, the new Defender, not being like the old Defender. You know, things shouldn't be like that, blah blah blah, the world's changed. I remember when it was all fields. Yeah. And that's fine. So go and fill your boots, and you can put your money where your mouth is. If you actively don't want a more basic commercial spec defender, I reckon the same money ish, including VAT, will go on an Ineos. So make your decision. And the other thing is, just go and order a South African Land Cruiser. You know that super simple spec Land Cruiser you can still buy?
Yeah, they do them in Australia as well, the 70 series. Yeah,
you can still buy a new old stock one of those, effectively. So, and I can't help being tempted by that if I was in the market.
Yeah, me too. Do you know what it is as well? It's just because there's a sort of integrity to it. It's like, you know where it's come from. You know they've been doing it for decades. So it's been sort of honed to perfection.
Yeah.
Because Toyota have a policy of continuous improvement, which I sort of suspect that Land Rover have forgotten a bit. I don't think the Defender evolved very much unless it had to. But I feel like Toyota will have just worked away at that car. You know, they'll have heard some reports that there's a bit that lets in dust and it gently wears at something over time. So then they'll sort out a new seal for it. And so as of 1982... They had a better seal on some.
There was an extra lobe on the extrusion of rubber that you never hear about. Nobody talks about it.
No,
but it's just there. Well, the thing is my Suzuki Jimny is a terribly flawed car in many ways. But you see, you pay your money and you make your choice. That car is very utilitarian, but yet, yes, it has got a few pieces of technology in it, but it cost me 18,000 quid brand new.
Mm.
There's a massive difference, last time I checked, between 18 and 40 something thousand pounds. And how badly do you want something?
The Jimny is cheap, relatively.
Yeah.
And it looks great. And it comes from a company with a long pedigree of making cars like that.
Yeah, reliable too. Yeah.
The Ineos is expensive. To my eyes, it's ugly and quite amateurishly designed. And it's from a company that makes chemicals and plastic. And I just don't get it. But my ultimate point is I just don't know who is actually going to buy it for that money. I think 25,000 a year they're going to try for. I just don't see it.
Questions to them when they put the questions out was, are you going to make an electric one? P.S. I know last week you bought BP's petrochemicals side of the business. And they kind of went, oh, well, we've considered it with the type of people we expect to buy it, but we think we're going to hold out and go for hydrogen. They'll probably offer it as a fuel cell vehicle at some point. But you know what? We could talk about this for the whole damn podcast. We haven't even mentioned Nikola and the Cybertruck and the Rivian R1T. All fully electric, all very interesting all-terrain vehicles.
And the Bollinger as well, that's still
there. Of course, the Bollinger, electric. Bollinger. Yeah, do you know what? And that, I think more than anything, that's sort of the DNA of a Series 2 Land Rover, because that is super simple and super slab-sided.
I mean, they've really gone ultra slabby. That's the thing. But I would love to get a bunch of, and I don't know why Ineos didn't do this, but get a bunch of car design students and just go, make a 21st century super functional car so that it treads that line between, you know, because often very functional things are also very attractive things, aren't they? Form follows function. Concorde looks the way it does because it had to for aerodynamic reasons. There's no styling there. It was just aerodynamic function of a supersonic airliner. And
it looks like the finger of a Terrorhawk, I think. The Concorde. Or the thing from The Dark Crystal, which I can't remember the name of.
Oh,
do you remember the Jim Henson's bloody Dark Crystal? I don't know what it was called. It looked like a sort of witch mixed with a crow. And the other off-roader we haven't even mentioned is the Toyota FJ Cruiser, which has gone out of production now, but you know that, I think, and you mentioned about Toyota's quality, if Toyota had kept that car going, or if they brought it back but with a more efficient drivetrain option, that is such a good piece of design. It's got that right balance between being slightly luxurious but still incredibly rugged. The price point was really low. It looked spectacular. I still think it was. And They've developed a whole cult in themselves, haven't they? The people that own them absolutely love them, and the aftermarket's gone crackers for them. And I still want a right-hand drive one. I do, Rich.
Well, I always wondered why they didn't sell them in the UK, and then I saw one in real life in the US, and they're deceptively massive, aren't they? They're scaled for America, I think.
Yeah, they are a bit Lego Duplo.
Big here. But yeah. Yeah, the thing is, that's the point. I mean, that was pure style, wasn't it, really? I mean, I'm sure it was all right off-road because it had a Land Cruiser chassis underneath. But yeah, that was a styling exercise, first and foremost, which is fine because that's how most people buy cars. They can pretend it's like, well, I need something that goes off-road. But no, you bought it because it looks nice. I've just remembered something else. The ultimate example, I think, in recent times of a car that was pure function but looked quite cool as a result of it and didn't see light of day was that. Did you see that thing, the Ox, that Gordon Murray did?
Yes.
It was meant for developing countries, and it was a flat pack car. And the function in that was superb. You know, things like, I think the bench seats in the back were designed to be taken out and used as sand ladders if you needed them.
Yeah.
And it had a transit powertrain, but they realised that you don't need the 6-speed box that came with a lot of transits with that engine, because in the developing world, you're not going on a motorway and you need a cruising gear. So they saved weight by just putting the 5-speed in. And it's just stuff like that where you go, it's just, they've thought about this. It's intelligent. But I thought that looked quite groovy.
Don't go stealing this idea for the Grand Tour. I really wanted to build one of those in indoors somewhere, or take one across to like Sark in bags and build it.
I hate to break it to you. This is exactly what we wanted to do on the Grand Tour. And we were talking to the Ox people. The whole project has, I think, now dissolved away. So on the Grand Tour, we made our own. We made our own flat pack car. And we did a whole thing where the presenters had to build it and then escape from... what was the country they went to? I can't even remember. It was brilliant. It's one of my favourite things we ever did on the Grand Tour, actually. It's really good. But yeah, anyway, that Ox, I think it's not pretty, but that's almost
because it's not supposed to be.
So yeah, exactly. You go, well, it's not meant to be. It's not been styled. Anything on it is for function. So it sort of has integrity.
If you want a proper functional car that nobody knows about, look up Laurel Log.
Laurel Log?
Yeah, no, it sounds like a bad comedian from the sort of black and white era.
Or I was picturing, for some reason, a sort of Lana Del Rey-style singer, but a drag act.
Oh, okay, so a drag Lana Del Rey.
Yeah, and she comes Oh, it's Laurel Log, brilliant. She's hilarious.
Laurel Log.
Yeah.
L-A-W-I-L, Loyal, Laurel. I think it's Italian or Portuguese. L-A-W-I-L, and then Log, L-O-G. I mean, calling a car a log in these days is quite amusing.
Lowell.
Lowell, which is Lowell.
Lowell.
It's Lowell. No, please welcome on stage. It is a micro sort of truck thing. Are you looking it up as we speak?
I am, but I've got a micro car, and then I've got this little truck thing.
They did a truck thing.
And then there's a Lowell William, which is a little van thing.
Oh yes,
like
that's it.
The van.
Oh yeah, they did the Willem.
A Willem.
Yeah, which was also made under license, I think, by Lambretta.
Wow.
But if you could buy me, like when you're really rich, or when Smith & Sniff makes us multimillionaires, which clearly it's not going to, could you buy me a Lowell Log?
Sure.
Because I just want to have a car called a Log. And it looked just looks so spectacularly simple. I want everybody who's listening to this podcast to go, I've got to Google Laurel Log. And for the first time ever, Google will have more than 8 people worldwide Googling Laurel Log.
Why not? We'll put some pictures on Twitter, but then encourage people to search Twitter and it'll start trending. And everyone will go, what the bloody hell is going on here?
I'd absolutely love that. A Laurel Log.
Well, while we encourage everyone to go and lay a log, it's probably time for a short promotional message.
Hey, Rich, what's the worst thing about getting a car insurance quote?
Well, it's filling out the online form, obviously.
Exactly. So what if I told you there's a car insurance broker that can give you a personalised quote from a real human being on the phone?
Get away.
It's all true. It's Adrian Flux Insurance.
Well, I'm going to ring them right now.
Well, hold up. Don't do that yet, because we've got to finish recording this podcast, yeah?
Fair point.
This episode of the Smith & Sniff podcast is sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance.
Explain to me why you put a photograph on social media of what appeared to be a Mark II Cavalier sort of dangling on top of a tree.
Well, this week, just gone, I've made a video on my Car Pervert YouTube channel, which is urban exploring in multiple car decay. Do you know about urban exploring?
Oh, yeah. Because some urban explorers got me into the old Rover factory at Longbridge the year it closed. It's one of the most incredible things I've ever done in my life.
I bet it was so exciting.
I mean, Longbridge, when it shut down for about 2-3 years, maybe more after that, it was sort of perfectly preserved while they were working out what to do with it, and the new Chinese owners were stripping stuff out but then putting back the assembly line for the MGTF and everything. And a lot of the site was sort of just left, and it became this urban exploring motherlode. And I got in touch with a couple of guys who were big in that scene, because the true purists, as I guess you know, don't you, you've done it, you know, they believe that you first of all, you never break in.
No.
You find a legit way of just sneaking in.
Yes.
And you never take anything, you never disturb anything, you just take photographs.
That's right.
And it's UK law, trespass is not a criminal offence, it's a civil matter, so the landowner would have to come after you and demonstrate damages. So it's not breaking the law as such. I mean, it's, I guess it is, but it's not a criminal offence. So
it's polite law breaking.
Yes, exactly. And if you do it right and you're not a knob about it, then yeah, no harm, no foul.
Exactly.
The Longbridge thing was unbelievable, because I met them in a McDonald's car park at sort of 11 o'clock at night or something, maybe even later. And we went, and there was a way they'd found into the property, which was where a metal fence met an old stone bridge that went over a railway, one of the railway lines that went into the factory.
Oh, okay, okay.
And there was a gap, because the stone had a sort of base, and then where it tucked in to then get to the main brickwork, there was just a gap between the metal and the stone. And you had to put your foot on the stonework and sort of then loft yourself through this gap. And it,
oh my gosh, it feels like you're narrating an Enid Blyton.
Yeah,
exciting,
it was a bit
like Famous Five book.
Five go urban exploring. She missed the trick there. But then
she totally
we
did.
Arrive then, we're on the factory land, but we're at the bottom of a very, very steep hill with trees on it, that you had to scramble up, and you came out just on the edge of one of the access roads around the site. So we get to the top of this slope, and then suddenly a car drives by very slowly. It's an MGZT with security in it.
Of course.
And so we all ducked down in these trees, and it drove on, and then it went onto the roof. For people who have ever seen that Longbridge site before they knocked it down, there was a building called the Flight Shed, which was latterly their research and development place, and at the end of it had a tacked on bit of building with a flat roof on it. It was a car park, and it drove onto this flat roof, which was at the same level as the bit of land we were on, and then we could hear barking, and I was like, what's that? And the two guys went, oh yeah, forgot to mention security has dogs. I'm like, what the fuck, but you didn't tell me this. And I was thinking, if it releases the dog now, it's going to run after us. The only way out is run across the open land into the factory.
Kick it in the muzzle. Kick it in the muzzle.
Kick a dog.
I could.
Really?
Oh. Oh, well, in a situation, I was all prepped to when we were urban exiting. I said, if a dog comes at me, I'll kick it in the muzzle.
I hadn't thought of that. I couldn't. I don't think. Maybe in the heat of the moment, but
it's the same as a shark. You've got to kick it in the nose.
Well, you bang them on the nose, don't you? But it makes their eyes water, yeah. Which I've never understood, because they're surrounded
under
by
the water.
Salty water anyway. Oh no, you've added more. So I don't get that. Anyway, or is it tigers that makes their eyes water? Anyway, but yeah, I thought the only way out of this is to go back down the slope, but it's incredibly steep, and you will just tumble down through the trees and break an arm, or run across open ground and get bitten by the dog. So thankfully the guy kept the dog in the car and he was just having a fag or something. And then
of course he was.
We waited for him to move off and then we scuttled into the nearest sort of open doorway because all the doors were open and just wandered around the factory. And it was the most extraordinary thing. Like, you know, sort of the cliche of the Marie Celeste. It was like that. It was like everyone had just gone home for the night. You know, we went into some of the offices and there were jackets hanging on chairs and mugs on desks and calendars that were all on March 2005, which is when the place shut down, so or April, whenever it was.
My gosh, I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah, it's one of the most extraordinary things I've ever done in my life. It was just mad, and of course it's all been knocked down now, so you know, sort of, it was a golden opportunity. But yeah, spooky, like the all on the production line, body shells hanging from the slings, you know, for as they move down the production line. And yeah, one of the bits I shat my pants several times on this. One of them was we went into the paint shop, and as I later discovered, paint shops, if you shut them down completely, all the paint that's in the pipes just coagulates and that's it. You've basically written off your expensive paint making equipment. So
yeah,
you can leave them on an automated cycle where it sort of flows stuff through the pipes to keep it all working. And so we were sort of in the bowels of the paint shop and suddenly there was this... And I absolutely shat myself. It's just the machinery doing one of its maintenance cycles. And then we went into the main production, like one of the assembly halls, and there's just cars just sort of trapped in time, just moving, you know, part-assembled cars on the line. But there's all these red, big red LED boards that do, you know, line status and whatever rate of cars and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And one of those, huge red sign, just as we walked sort of around the corner, just flashed up, "Hello." And I was like, "They're watching us! Someone's watching us!" And it was just like, "No, it's just trapped in a sort of boot up cycle of some sort." But yeah, spooky. So yes. Anyway, long answer to your question. I have done urban exploring, and it was amazing. But you went an urban explorer to Mark II Cavalier in a tree.
Well, I got in touch with a guy who has a YouTube channel that just does Urban X, but he's really into cars as well. And he'd given me, he said, "I'm prepared to take you to this place where I think there's about 250 to 300 classics between the 30s and the 90s. And sure enough, we went on the hottest day of the year, and there were like 7 foot stinger nettles, a lot of sweat. And we found a way in which didn't involve destruction. And as with always, all we did is take photos and leave footsteps, and that was that. Mm. But it was unbelievable. I mean, we couldn't get round and see it all, but we found some fantastic cars, 30s commercial vehicles, old Land Rovers, old Rovers, 80s BMWs, 60s Mini Travellers, split screen Morris Minors, and we even found a flipping Jensen Interceptor.
No.
We found a Jensen Interceptor. I couldn't believe it. We found this bloody thing. I managed to clear a lot of the stingers around it. And it's still got the whole interior in it.
Did you take a saw?
I didn't take a saw because I thought it would look aggressive if we got caught.
We took some secateurs.
Do you know what I did take, which is... I didn't actually tell the bearded explorer about it, which is his name, who I went with. I took a backpack, which was actually a small cool box, and I brought a picnic with me. And I thought, that's a really stupid thing to do, because I ended up not eating it on the journey because it was a bit stressful. You know, we had to sneak around and it was very hot and sweaty. And I thought, why have I got a full fucking picnic in my backpack? I'm such a twat. Should have just left it in the car. But it was seriously exciting, and hopefully the people will appreciate the video. But if you like seeing cars that are beyond help, largely left for dead, I mean, Cortina Mark
Ones. Why were these cars there?
It's the back end, the overgrown back end of an existing metal recycling plant, and I think it dates back to the 30s, and it's not that far from an old RAF base, which I think explains some of the old commercial vehicles that have trees growing through them. I mean, we're talking split window lorries, we're talking cars from the 50s that are sat complete and returning to Earth. So complete to the point where there's still a fan belt on the engine. I mean, like, nobody's even robbed bits off them. So in a normal scrapyard, they would be be used as donors, wouldn't they?
And
in a normal scrapyard, you wouldn't see a Cortina still sat there that hadn't been banger aced, and you wouldn't see a Rover P4 that hadn't been banger aced. I mean, we found stuff that you just go, well, if this was owned by a banger racer, that would have gone around the track 30 years ago, 20 years ago. But, I mean, some of it was just incredible. I mean, I found a, BMW 735i from 1985. Just opposite that A Reg Cavalier that was just perched really high up. Yeah, I mean, we found some strange dereliction.
Was any of this stuff savable, do you think, or is it just all rotted beyond...
I think some of it was savable. I actually found an Austin Allegro two-door, and I'm slightly embarrassed to say I got more excited about it than the split window Morris Minor that was right next to it,
though
the split window Morris Minor. But it's like, oh my God, it's an Allegro, and it's a two-door. Oh my gosh, look at it. And it was complete. It had a really nice interior in it, and I actually am going to try and see if we can save the Interceptor, because I feel like it deserves to live on in some way. It shouldn't be sat there.
But you went in here sneaky, so the owners of the place didn't know you were there. But
exactly. We went in there in an Urban X way. So we snuck around, we took only video footage. And so there's quite a lot of David Attenborough style whispering, and there's quite a lot of crunching through dry underbrush, and there's quite a lot of maybe panting in places. We found a lot of Capris, I'm going to tell you that. We found one Capri which had no windows in it, and the interior had almost been turned into a garden. It was freaky. The interior was just sort of full of moss and ferns. It was so exciting. I think you're the sort of person that would appreciate it.
No, I'm really jealous, but you've...
Well, maybe one day I'll take you there, Rich, and we'll take a picnic. We'll do a Smith and Sniff urban picnic.
Bring a saw.
Should we do a scrapyard picnic? We should do a scrapyard picnic.
Smith and Sniff. That's a honey trap for Damon Albarn and his whistling S's.
Oh, scrapyard snacks.
Snacks with Smith and Smith.
Well, when we were recording the last Skrillex album with Scrapyard Snacks, and I thought, snacks. Started doing some percussion, and then was just whistling a little
bit. Went to Somalia, get some percussionists.
Somalia?
Yeah, but then went to a scrapyard in Southeast England.
One thing we did see was you with your Defender head on. Well, I found a Defender. It was a 110 commercial, K-Reg 1993. Oh. And again, totally complete, actually looked quite good.
Yeah.
And it was right next to the Interceptor, and I found some BL, we found some British Leyland CAC, and found a Marina that the front had rotted off it, around where the windscreen wiper panel is. It had actually fallen off, so it was pointing down when the rest of the car was pointing up a bit.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Quite a bloody... was it an Escort we saw in that field of stuff that was going for auction when we shot that vid for Smith & Sniff? That Escort, the front had sort of just flopped off.
Drooped off. Yeah. Escort Mark 1 van, yes. Wasn't it?
So I think it ended up selling for some idiotic money, but I don't know why, because it was ruined. I mean, anyway. This scrapyard that's sort of not... Is it in the countryside?
Yeah, it is. It's in the countryside. Yeah, it's on quite a long road, which you'd normally go along quite fast.
Ah, right.
And you certainly from the road, you wouldn't see any of the vehicles, but there's a public footpath that goes all the way around to the back, which is easily accessible. And if you peer through the fencing, you can see, like, I first clocked a two-door Range Rover vertical slack grill, and then I spied not one but two Ford Probes.
Oh my God.
And one of them, you'll have to watch the video, but one of them I thought there was an image that summed up 2020 perfectly. It was a vandalized Ford Probe with a caravan on its roof. And I thought, there's 2020 right there. as a piece of imagery.
Yeah. How's 2020 been for you, mate? Well, for a picture of a vandalised Ford Probe with a caravan on the roof. Oh God. Oh my God.
Oh, that bad.
Horrific image.
That bad.
Shit. That's extraordinary. But the video is on your CarPerf channel, Nye. Nye.
It's on there, Nye, and please you must watch it for sure. And yeah, there's a lot of derelict cars. There's a lot of sexy dereliction going on. Which is again another album by the Gorillaz, yeah, probably.
Sexy
at some point.
Sexy
dereliction.
Yeah, to South Africa to get some musicians for their studio recordings. Someone put a kettle on. Is there an old fashioned kettle on? Yeah. No, it's just Damon Albarn just talking again with his whistly voice.
Do you know the going back to the Grenadier?
Yeah,
I know you want to.
I just calmed down.
Of course, you've got Grenadier, and then you've got the what was the thing that I thought? Bombardier, which is the British beer.
Mm.
But all those old traditional military terms. There was a guy who used to live at the top of our cul-de-sac when I was very young, who everyone just called the Colonel. And I mean, he's long gone now. He was old when I was about 6 or 7. But he was probably not even a colonel. I mean, I don't even know. He might have just been called the Colonel and not even a colonel. What I do know is he was fond of booze. And he was a very, 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 very large man. he used to walk back from the pub exceptionally slowly, like, you know, a sort of shuffle. One of the legs scraped across the floor and the other one did a walk, scrape then a walk. But he was one of those guys, quite a rotund gentleman that pulled his trousers up a little too high. And it looked like someone had sort of put a tuna down his trousers, because there's a what's that term when you've got more tummy in your trouser than leg?
I know what you mean, where you sort of look like, you know, a what weeble. I mean, yeah.
He was that.
It's a good idea though, isn't it? I think I might start just telling people to call me Brigadier. And
let them assume that I was
ex-military man, and you know why.
Actually, Brigadier Porter. It's actually got a lovely ring,
all right,
to it.
Isn't it? There was a pub near where I grew up where the landlord was slightly fearsome and was always referred to as the captain. And I'm never sure if that was legit military.
He wasn't a captain.
No, I don't think
you
he was.
You know he wasn't.
I just remember the immortal phrase. I think some of my mates, we were in there underage drinking, and then the landlord appeared and someone went, "Oh shit, it's the captain." We all did a run. That's the same pub where a friend of mine fell out with the captain over something, got into a bit of a row with the captain in the pub, and ended with my friend going, "You know, fine, screw you." As he left, he spotted the remote for the pub TV on the bar and he just pocketed it on his way out so that the captain could never change the channels. But oh shit, it's the captain! I don't think he'd done any captaining in his life. He was just a sad old alcoholic. But anyway,
it's that 80s ballad, "The Captain of Our Hearts."
Oh yeah,
that's what he was. He was the captain of someone's heart,
probably.
So also, if I was to just go and buy a ship boat tomorrow, like a small ship boat for about 600 quid, because I'm the only person on the boat and I own it, does that make me a captain?
Yes.
So I could call myself...
I'm going to say that emphatically.
I could self-proclaim to be a captain when I own, I don't know, a 12-foot-long shitty boat.
Yeah. As long as you have to wear a certain type of hat. You know the hat I mean. If you wear that,
yes,
you're the captain.
I am the captain.
You are.
Oh, I forgot to say, the drunk old fat man called the Colonel at the top of our road, the reason why he always stayed in my mind as a child was because he had an absolutely beautiful canary yellow Alpha Sud.
What?
One of the early ones with the... Yeah, this was the weird thing. It was a car that didn't match him as a person.
No, I thought you were going to say Rover P6 or P5 or P4 even. I mean...
Yeah, no, he had a 70s chrome bumper canary yellow Alpha Sud, and it was always very well polished on the drive, but I don't think I ever saw him drive it, but that's probably because he was always drunk.
Or he just couldn't fit in it anymore. I would not have guessed.
I mean,
he was a large
guy. I mean, he looked like a salmon had fallen down his trousers, but not like that. You know what I mean? So the drunk colonel with the chrome bumper Alpha.
Wow. Yeah. Mismatched people and cars. There's a topic for another day. But for now, I think we probably have to wrap this up. So I've been Brigadier Richard Porter, and he's Captain Johnny Smith. And we will do another one of these same time next week, Monday mornings. We're here, ready for your listening pleasure or near offer. In the meantime, do go and check out Johnny's Car Pervert YouTube channel, where you'll find his video of urban exploring around a bizarre collection of scrap cars. I'm going to go and watch that now, because I feel bad that I haven't already.
You do. You should do.
And if you're very bored, I've written a book of boring car trivia. It's available on Amazon. Go and buy that, blah, 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 blah. I think that's all.
It's good. It features a marina door handle on the cover, which does. I love it, because it's like a great piece of clip art.
I made that from scratch, though, because weirdly, the clip art people haven't thought to do a marina door handle. So I had to make it myself.
Twats.
In Photoshop.
I loved it.
It was quite,
I think it's great,
time-consuming.
It's remember we did it before. It's my best. I've got to dry my lips for this. It's my best impression of a Land Rover Discovery 2 driving too fast past my house. Ready? That's what it is, because you can't hear anything apart from the roof bars, and that's why I know that they're speeding in a 30. Because roof bars don't whistle at 30.
No.
They don't, do they? They bloody don't.
Ah, the smoking gun, the whistling trail.
The captain of a heart. Da, 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 da.
All right, good to talk, mate. See you next time.
Bye. This episode of the Smithers Div podcast is sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance.